pushed me along. I'll go get the toolbox, and you can fix our broken home. You can fix our broken home, Daddy, I just know you can. I watched you fix my wagon, and now the wheels are tied again. Things will turn out all right, Daddy. Don't you cry, 'cause Mama's gone. I'll go get the toolbox, and you can fix our broken home. Yes, I'll go get the toolbox, and you can fix our broken home.
Here we go again, starting over one more time. I've always heard it said, out of sight, out of mind. But as far as I can see, there's no truth to that old line. 'Cause it's like it's always been, you're leaving and I'm crying. There's been a long line of heartaches, so many tears I've cried. I've lost count of all the sleepless nights, lonely days and sad goodbyes. Well, it does you no good when those burning teardrops fall, saying everything's gonna be alright to a heart that's seen it all. Tell just how this story goes. 'Cause when it comes to love, I guess heaven only knows. Till then, I suppose it comes down to you and me. And it's like they always say, what you love, you must set free. There's been a long goodbyes. Oh, it does you no good when those burning teardrops fall, saying everything's gonna be alright to a heart that's seen it all.
Faced a barren waste without the taste of water. Cool water.
Water.
Old Dan and I with throats burned dry and souls that cry for
water.
Water.
Cool
water.
You listen to the man, he's a devil of a man, and he spreads the burning sand with water.
Water.
Then can you see that big green tree where the water's running free, and it's waiting there for me and you? The nights are cool and I'm a fool, each star's a pool of water. But with the dawn, I'll wake and yawn and carry on to
water. Water.
WRCT Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulchritude.
What kind of help does the IRS have for identity theft victims?
If you suspect you're a victim of tax-related identity theft, go to irs.gov/identitytheft to learn how to prevent potential refund fraud and protect.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
The United States, under the orders of President Joe Biden, has executed a strike which killed al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri, who worked closely with Osama bin Laden in the 9/11 attacks. And naturally, right-wingers are desperately trying to downplay and dismiss this event, which, were it under a Republican president, they would be demanding that the president be enshrined in some kind of gold-plated statue. That's what they would be doing if it were Trump who had announced this. And it's an incredible contrast that we've seen over the last 24, 36, 72 hours, where on the one hand, the Biden administration strikes a 9/11 terrorist, a major person on the global wanted list. And on the other hand, Donald Trump quite literally downplays taking Saudi money in this golf tournament that was played, an event being played at Bedminster, his golf course, and says, bizarrely, nobody's gotten to the bottom of 9/11. Think about that. In the same weekend, in the same 3-4 day period, former President Donald Trump kowtowing to the conspiracy theorists with nobody's gotten to the bottom of 9/11, whereas on the other hand, Joe Biden authorizes a strike that kills one of the major actors in those 9/11 attacks. Now, before we get into the right wingers falling all over themselves to criticize Joe Biden, I think it's important to mention that any serious progressive who respects the rule of law and due process and all of the stuff that the right claims to respect but actually doesn't, reasonable progressives can be generally concerned about what is exactly the legal infrastructure for when the U.S. strikes these individuals in other countries. They aren't getting due process. That's absolutely true. And while I, on a personal level, have no doubt whatsoever, based on everything that we've seen and read about Ayman al-Zawahiri, that this guy was guilty, that is my personal opinion. And he didn't get due process. And of course, you can argue, well, this is technically part of a wartime situation that dates all the way back. Well, but that's complicated, too. So I'm not downplaying that at all. That's not why the right wingers are angry. That's not at all why the right wingers are angry. So let's first start with the announcement from Joe Biden.
Make it clear again tonight that no matter how long it takes, no matter where you hide, if you are a threat to our people, the United States will find you and take you out. After relentlessly seeking Zawahiri for years under Presidents Bush, Obama, and Trump, our intelligence community located Zawahiri earlier this year. He had moved to downtown Kabul to reunite with members of his immediate family. After carefully considering the clear and convincing evidence of his location, I authorized a precision strike that would remove him from the battlefield once and for all. This mission was carefully planned, rigorously minimized the risk of harm to other civilians. And 1 week ago, after being advised that the conditions were optimal, I gave the final approval to go get him. And the mission was a success. None of his family members were hurt, and there were no civilian casualties.
Okay, so that's the announcement from Joe Biden. You would think that the right would rally around this. What a patriotic big boy that Joe Biden did, but no. Here is Tucker Carlson saying, you know, Biden's bragging about killing this al-Qaeda leader. I don't feel any safer.
Gave a speech boasting that he's killed an Al-Qaeda figure in Afghanistan. Great. Feel safer? Of course you don't. Nobody does. And the reason nobody feels safer
is that Tucker Carlson is friends with Donald Trump.
Is Biden's response to the disaster in Afghanistan.
Oh.
Rather than pause and learn from it, maybe fire the people responsible for it, not simply the self-destructive withdrawal from Afghanistan, but also the pointless 20-year war there, rather than do any of that like a normal person would do, Biden immediately set off in another direction, provoking yet another conflict, this one in Eastern Europe.
So look at this. Biden authorizes a strike that kills a 9/11 leader. And Tucker says, I don't feel any safer because of Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan, which is identical to what Trump's withdrawal from Afghanistan would have been. And he blames Biden for provoking Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Reeks of desperation. Senate Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy posting to Twitter, we owe a debt of gratitude to the brave Americans who took out the terrorist al-Zawahiri. The Biden administration must provide Congress with a briefing as soon as possible to discuss the resurgence of al-Qaeda in the region following his disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. So Biden not getting any of the credit from McCarthy. Trump, of course, would have had McCarthy praying at an altar to him. And then Newsmax taking the dementia approach and the COVID approach, saying, well, OK, instead of talking about the substance of this terrorist being killed, Newsmax cuts in and says Biden seems confused and sick.
Now, justice has been delivered and this terrorist leader is no more. People around the world no longer need to fear the vicious and determined killer. The United States continues to demonstrate our resolve and our capacity to defend the American people against those who seek to do us harm.
All right, so we told you we'd jump in and show you some of this. The president at the White House, big speech. He's got COVID again. He got the recurring case, the rebound case, I guess. But they brought him out. And they gave him the teleprompter. Doesn't seem too familiar with the speech. Seems a bit off base, but maybe he's still sick. Let's go now to Chief White House Correspondent.
Now, that's actually kind of funny how they dismiss the entire substance and instead go with like, oh, Biden has COVID again. If this were Donald Trump, Newsmax would be do 24 hours of coverage with Trump, looking victorious and as alpha as Trump can possibly look. So immediately downplaying all of it. Reasonable concerns for progressives about all of these types of killings, but the right just desperate not to give Biden any kind of win, even by their standards, is the important point that I would make. Monkeypox is unfortunately exploding. New York City has declared a state of emergency, and the right continues to repeat homophobic tropes to try to dismiss this one also. I mean, listen, they'll any public health concern, they will dismiss, if possible, with whatever justification they can find. With COVID, it's the China virus and it's not really dangerous and the masks don't work and they want to take our freedoms or whatever. With monkeypox, it's basically a gay disease. It's a gay sexually transmitted disease. This is what they're going with because it appears as though the very early handful of cases were in gay men. And of course, it has gone well beyond that now. And it's quite frankly, an incredibly irresponsible distraction to be focusing on that, but we will get to that. So a bunch of different things going on. Daily Beast report, it may be too late to stop monkeypox becoming endemic in the U.S. and Europe. We failed to get on top of the monkeypox outbreak, and we may have missed the chance to stop the disease becoming endemic and a permanent threat in the U.S. and Europe. Monkeypox is spreading fast all over the world, especially in the United States and Europe, with cases doubling every 2 weeks. There's a growing risk that monkeypox will become a permanent problem in countries where before outbreaks were rare and small. The pox is, in other words, close to becoming endemic in a lot of new places. If this happens, it might become very difficult to eradicate. Monkeypox causes a fever and rash, is fatal in a small number of cases, will become yet another disease that people have to worry about all the time. There are two paths to endemicity. If the virus infects enough people fast enough to outpace efforts to trace transmission and vaccinate, it could become endemic in people. The good news is that this kind of endemicity doesn't have to be permanent. It's hard but possible to reverse it. But monkeypox was originally a zoonotic animal virus. It circulates in rodent and monkey species in West and Central Africa, where outbreaks in humans are frequent. If the pox finds a new home in some animal species in North America or Europe, could be squirrels, rats, or prairie dogs, it will be all but impossible to eradicate regionally. Meanwhile, New York City has declared a monkeypox state of emergency. Mayor Eric Adams has declared a state of emergency due to monkeypox. The city estimates 150,000 people, mostly men who have sex with other men, are at risk. The city has more than 1,200 reported cases, about 25% of all the cases in the U.S., and continues to see the numbers rise. In terms of the vaccines, the city is facing a shortage of monkeypox vaccines, with appointments filling up minutes after they're released. The city expects to get 80,000 monkeypox vaccine doses in the coming days. Now, there are some, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and others, who are mocking the entire thing, calling it a scam, saying it is a sexually transmitted disease that only threatens a specific group of people. She says, laugh at it, mock it, reject it.
Of course, monkeypox is a threat to some people in our population, but we know what causes it. And that's pretty much, it's basically a sexually transmitted disease. So it's not a threat to most of the population. And so it's not a global pandemic. It's really not. And people just have to laugh at it, mock it, and reject it. So.
This is exactly how COVID, to some degree, COVID much more contagious, became what it did. I mean, remember, Matt Gaetz laughed at it. Early in the pandemic, Matt Gaetz put on this enormous gas mask and went on the House floor, and it was all a big joke. And then we know how that all went. And if this is only a sexually transmitted disease that affects gay men, why do kids now have it? Well, it was only a matter of time. It was only a matter of time. It spreads through contact of all kinds. And if an adult who's infected picks up their kid can end up with monkeypox. So this is a very serious situation. Not a shock that Republicans are again laughing off another public health concern. Will they ever learn? Find me on Twitter at D Pacman and let me know. We're going to take a very quick break. Much more coming up today. Glad you're with us. Listen, I don't know what other shows you watch. I don't know what other shows you listen to, but this program is a little different from some of those others. We actually are primarily funded by our audience. Now, I know the right wingers love to email in and say, oh, it's George Soros that's funding you, or it must be the Democratic Party or whatever. That is very much not the case.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Well, part of that is true. The bonus show is one of the perks of membership. I would love for you to sign up at joinpacman.com, and you can use the coupon code BIGVOTING22 to get yourself a tidy little discount off of membership. We have another one of these completely Kafkaesque moments in American politics. Donald Trump has endorsed Eric in a Missouri Republican Senate primary. Both of the top candidates are named Eric, and both Erics are taking credit, saying, I have been endorsed by Donald Trump. It is an absolutely bizarre, bizarre situation. And Donald Trump, again, as the Daily Beast reports, throwing the race into chaos with his Eric endorsement. Check this out. Donald, there were questions about whether Donald Trump would or would not endorse anyone in this race. One of the Erics, Eric Greitens, was very much lobbying for the Trump endorsement. He's done some wacky things, including bizarre campaign ads and so many different things. The primary is today. And last night, Donald Trump puts out the following endorsement. There is a big election in the great state of Missouri. By the way, half the words are capitalized. Just I'm not even going to mention that as we go, because just half of the words are randomly capitalized. OK, there is a big election in the great state of Missouri, and we must send a MAGA champion and true warrior to the U.S. Senate, someone who will fight for border security, election integrity, our military and great veterans, together with having a powerful toughness on crime and the border. We need a person who will not back down to the radical left lunatics who are destroying our country. I trust the great people of Missouri on this one to make up their own minds, much as they did when they gave me landslide victories in the 2016 and 2020 elections. And I am therefore proud to announce that Eric, all caps, Eric, has my complete and total endorsement. This is another unbelievable Kafkaesque fiasco. Both candidates are named Eric. He doesn't say which Eric he's endorsing, clearly trying to have it both ways. No matter which Eric wins, Trump can claim victory. And the undergirding of this is that MAGA world, the MAGATs, are sort of divided on the race. Some of them like Eric Greitens, some of them like Eric Schmidt. Some of them don't know what's up and what's down and day and night, and they're just in a fog and have absolutely no idea what's going on whatsoever. Now, earlier on, there were some anecdotal reports that Trump was planning on or intended to endorse Eric Greitens, but it genuinely doesn't appear that that's the case. Now, check this out. Both of them, both Erics, accepting the endorsement. Eric Greitens immediately posting, honored to have the support of President Trump. We will MAGA. With this big picture that says President Trump endorses Eric Greitens. Greitens also tweeting, quote, I am honored to receive Trump's endorsement. From the beginning, I've been the true MAGA champion, fighting against the Rhino establishment backing Schmidt. President Trump said it best when he characterized Schmidt's campaign as great dishonesty in politics. Well, I guess then Trump endorsed Greitens, right? Well, no, not really. Schmidt also took credit for the endorsement, going to Twitter with red alarm emojis saying, endorsement President Trump. I'm grateful for President Trump's endorsement as the only America First candidate who has actually fought for election integrity, border security, and against the left's indoctrination of our kids. I'll take that fight to the Senate to save America. They both sound like unhinged MAGA lunatics using all of the hallmarks of that random capitalization of non-proper nouns in their tweets, delusions of grandeur and general confusion about how American politics works. They both sort of sound like pretty good MAGA candidates. So Donald Trump, it's really a cop out. Initially, it seemed like Trump was just confused, like Trump intended to endorse one or the other Eric and ended up accidentally not. It now is looking abundantly clear that this is just another Trump cop out, and he'll call this a victory no matter what. Whichever of the Erics ends up winning, Trump's going to say, I got another one, put another slash mark in my win column. Hey, this is really, really funny and also sort of sad. One of the things we've learned about the neo-reactionary Republican Party, some people call it Trumpism, some people call it MAGA. Some people don't talk about it at all, and I envy those people, quite frankly. One of the things we've learned about them is they will fall for just about any scam that's presented to them by Republicans, by Donald Trump, by Don Jr., by Kimberly Guilfoyle, whoever, right? Okay, they fall for it. You say, hey, we need your money because I got to fix up my private plane. They'll donate. If you say, I need your money because I'm going to do audits and we're going to recount and sue and overturn the election, and they just start hemorrhaging money, okay? They just start sending the money in. They are that dumb. They are that gullible. One of the things many of you have been writing to me about recently is that you are on, you know, Republican mailing lists or Trump mailing lists, whatever, just to kind of see what's going on. And many of you have written to me that you're getting hammered with fundraising requests signed by Trump, although some of them aren't from Trump's pack. Some of them are from the Republican Senate Committee or the GOP, the RNC, whatever. And that sometimes they're so frequent that it's multiple times per hour. I've gotten screenshots of text messages from viewers showing me that like four times in an hour they were getting text messages signed by Donald Trump in Trump's voice asking for money. Now, right wing, what to even call it? Right winger Charlie Kirk thinks Trumpists aren't dumb enough to fall for the fundraising cringe. Now, I have to give it to Charlie Kirk. In this clip we're going to look at, Kirk correctly identifies that there's too many fundraising messages going out. He's completely correct about that. But the funny thing is he says, our people aren't dumb enough to fall for this. No, Charlie, they are dumb enough to fall for it. That's what we've seen. Take a look at this.
Do you get some of these emails from Donald Trump or from the NRSC? I need $20 right now. By the way, it's not from Trump. It's from all the consultants around him. And I love Trump. I defend Trump. And I just think the people around him that are sending these emails are doing such a disservice to Donald Trump.
Right.
I mean, it is a joke. It is a mockery. I talk to grassroots people all the time. They say, Charlie, why do I get all these emails? I mean, I could show you my text messages here. It is an absolute insult to our intelligence. This is just over a couple days.
It's really not an insult to their intelligence. It's tailored to their intelligence.
Just text messages. Trump rally alert. Have you RSVP'd for Trump's rally in Wisconsin? No, I live in Arizona, actually. How about this one? Don Jr., my father just called and asked about you, friend. He's activated your 7 times impact for 5 minutes. By the way, I know Don, and I know that this stuff is not even being run by them.
So by the way, and notice that Charlie Kirk, because he doesn't want to lose access, Charlie Kirk knows that this is just horrible. It looks horrible, but he doesn't want to lose access to Trump and Don Jr. and everybody. So he insists like they're not even aware of any of this stuff. So who is it that's doing? Who has the authority to send stuff written in Trump and Don Jr.'s name?
And Trump will deliver marks at a major rally. This next one. These are like within 5 minutes. They're sending them nonstop.
Yep.
Offer attached from Office of President Trump, Mar-a-Lago. Okay, he's in Bedminster right now. This is your only chance to claim the end of month 7 times impact. Trump alert now. President Trump needs your support. Do you have his back? 15 minutes left. By the way, I've tried my best to try to tell the Trump team to stop sending these stupid emails, and no one listens to me, so I'm going to have to do it on the show.
Right.
You are going to lose your supporters if you keep on sending out this unfiltered garbage. How about this one? Biden and Kamala are terrified that you'll click this link.
Kamala.
Save America. People are not this dumb, okay?
Actually,
they're
like,
well, we have to raise as much money as we can. Then how about you treat your voters with respect?
Right.
Do you get?
So listen, the only Charlie Kirk is completely correct that this looks absolutely terrible. I mean, the number of these pathetic emails. We covered one where it's like win lunch with Trump. And in the fine print, it's like, Trump will not be at the lunch. It's like they were going to send Lindsey Graham or something like that. It was absurd. And a lot of us would say these are insults to our intelligence. But it seems like a lot of the people that are getting the stuff really are this dumb. That's the reality. And case in point, you need look only after the 2020 election. They were fundraising every 10 minutes for audits and legal challenges and overturn and all this stuff. And you look down at the fine print and it would say 50, 60, 75, I think in one case, percent of each dollar donated would actually be used to pay off Trump's campaign debt or to generally fund. I don't remember if at the time it was the Save America PAC or whatever else. And I think it's also possible that Charlie Kirk is playing this as, this isn't effective, this will alienate voters, and it is too much, and you know, it's an insult to people's intelligence. Charlie Kirk runs an organization that also, to some degree, depends on donations from many of the same people. And it wouldn't shock me if Charlie Kirk is aware that the pie is being sliced into so many pieces that the donations to Turning Point may also be declining dramatically. I mean, even the Trumpist donations, I don't know what's going on with Turning Point's fundraising, to be clear. But the Trump donations go, there's Trump's PAC, there's the RNC, there's the Republican Senate Campaign Committee, and all these different things. All of these MAGA people with their hands out for the grift. And it seems like they're all kind of getting hurt. And I would, if a Republican is complaining about another Republican, the first thought that should occur to you is, do they have a personal interest in this? Are they personally being hurt by what they're criticizing? And when it comes to Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA, it's completely plausible that that's what's going on. We'll have this clip on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. Make sure you're following us there. Today, we're going to be speaking with Professor Paul Slovic, who teaches psychology at the University of Oregon and also is president of the Decision Sciences Research Institute in Eugene, Oregon, Really great having you on. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, David. It's good to be with you.
So maybe to start with, we make decisions as humans about risk reward all the time in our everyday lives. I think with many of the types of decisions we make, we have the feeling that we're pretty good at assessing the level of risk when we are undertaking these decisions. Generally speaking, are humans as good as we think at assessing risk or not?
It depends. If we're in a situation that's familiar to us, that we've, you know, experienced before and learned from our mistakes and our successes, then I think we're pretty good. If it's a novel situation where the stakes are high, then we are challenged, particularly if the likelihood of something very good or very bad happening is small, and we have to kind of figure out, well, you know, how do we deal with this? Is it a risk that we're willing to take and that it's beneficial for us to take?
Yeah, I mean, maybe to think through an example, lots of people are afraid of flying on commercial aircraft, and there's all sorts of different statistics that are often presented by those who extol the safety record of commercial aircraft. And sometimes they say, here's your risk of death per million passenger miles flown, or the chance of a fatal crash is, you know, some small number. And, you know, if you told me there was a 1% chance of a fatal crash, I'm not getting on the airplane. I know that that's quite high. I've taken hundreds of flights, right? So 1 out of 100 sounds very high. But when the numbers are smaller, it does become more difficult to think of what that really means for us, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And more generally, the numbers really don't communicate very well with us. What's more important is our experience, you know, and have we flown and everything's gone okay, and what do we hear on television or media? You know, has there been a recent crash, or has there been something that's happened that leads us to have less trust in the safety of airliners? Like if there's the 737s a few years ago were mysteriously crashing and people didn't know exactly what was going on. Well, that was scary. So all of these things are a factor that affects our, what we call our feeling of risk. Because most of the time we take risks depending on how we feel about it, whether we're worried or scared, as opposed to whether the statistics, seem okay to us.
Yeah, I mean, thinking of the airplane example, you often hear you're more likely to get into an accident and die driving to the airport than on the plane, but it certainly doesn't feel that way, I think, to lots of people. So that seems to be the psychological layer to it.
Right. So there's a lot of things going on there. When you're driving, you feel, you know, you're in control.
Right.
Of the risk. And you are partially in control, although not as much as you think you are, because there are other drivers on the roads, so and there may be some bad conditions on the roadway and so forth. But you feel in control. When you're on the plane, you know that, you know, you're not controlling that plane. And so you have to trust the pilots and the system. These days, many of the planes are being flown, by computer, but it doesn't, you know, we don't see that.
When it comes to something like COVID-19, there's been a lot of interesting websites where you can plug in a variety of different data about yourself and about a scenario in which you're thinking of putting yourself. And the idea is it will spit something out to you, objective, that you can then use to determine whether it's a safe enough situation for you or not. So, of course, we know age and pre-existing conditions are risk factors for getting very sick with COVID. We also know that it spreads more easily indoors than outdoors. And I did one of these before our interview, and I can keep feeding information, right? How many people am I going to be around? Are they vaccinated? Am I indoors or outdoors? Will the encounter be 1, 2, or 3 hours? All these different things. And then it tells me your risk is a 3 out of 10. It seems like it's very difficult to really turn that into actionable intelligence in a sense. I mean, it's so detailed, but at the same time, what do I do with that information?
Absolutely. First, I'm not sure how many people use these sites.
Yeah.
Most of the time, we're just operating again on our experience and how much how important it is for us to do, you know, to have this meeting or to go to this event and this sort of thing. And again, we're using our feelings more than any statistics. Sure, we know that in general, if we're older or we have a pre-existing condition that makes us vulnerable, that we have to be more careful. And I think people are sensitive to that and are trying to monitor that and be careful. But I think more generally, as we see, very few people are taking precautions right now. We see few people wearing masks, and it's like it doesn't exist anymore. Even though COVID is still quite prevalent, we're told that the effects are not as serious as the early versions, and we feel pretty comfortable going about our business as though things were normal, even though they're not. But again, it's not really a matter of statistics. It's a matter of how we feel about it. And the thing about our feelings is sometimes they deceive us. You know, we can't always trust them.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the back to normal COVID feelings that you talk about, you know, I don't remember if it's Daniel Dennett or Daniel Kahneman who had a particular heuristic that they wrote about, but there's this kind of familiarity where once COVID is no longer something new and we've been living with the risk for a period of time, even if we have not necessarily been actually engaging in risky behavior ourselves, it sort of becomes background in a sense where this is now part of the status quo of life. And it seems that may allow people to feel as though the risk has lessened, even though it really hasn't. Maybe we've just gotten more used to it.
Yes, that definitely happens. So we're pretty comfortable with the seasonal flu, and even though it could be serious, and a lot of people got pretty sick and some died, you know, it was something that we lived it with and became kind of normalized. So these things become normalized unless something special happens. Just like gun violence. I mean, gun violence in this country has become normalized, but every once in a while we have some sort of unusual and horrific event like we've had in recent weeks in Highland Park, Illinois, and Buffalo, that shakes us out of that and says, wait a minute, you know, this is different. And we start to pay attention for a while. And then it's sort of our concern fades away. There's sort of a window of when we're suddenly awake to the problem and concerned about it, want something done, and then over time that window starts to close. So again, this is the way our feelings go. You know that these events can shake us out of our what we call our psychic numbing, at least for a while, and that's the window when action needs to be taken.
It seems also there's the other side where, for example, after 9/11, people's perception of the risk of, for example, being on a hijacked plane or being the victim of a terrorist attack was also much higher than the real risk as well.
Yes. And, you know, what we know is that that if the consequences are very, you know, imaginable and scary, you know, again, that creates a, just thinking about those consequences sends a strong feeling of worry or anxiety, you know, into our brain. And then it doesn't really matter what the probability is. That is, our brain can't moderate a feeling by a probability. Unless that probability is so low that you could call it zero.
Right.
If zero, you don't worry about it. But as long as you've got that feeling that's driven by the consequences, it feels as though it's likely. And it doesn't matter whether it's a 1% chance or a 10 or a 40%. Those numbers don't matter because you're thinking of the consequences and you're feeling at risk. And we call that, you know, probability neglect, you know, that we're not sensitive to the different levels of probability, even though those are important. You know, it really makes a difference if the chance is 1 in a million or 1 in 10, this sort of thing. But it's hard for us when we're going on our feelings to make those distinctions. We need to think analytically and step away from our feelings and think about, well, what is this probability, you know, and is this, and how likely is it, and what's it compared to other probabilities that we encounter and know something about. So it's a very complicated dance that our brain does between feelings and reason.
A couple other things I want to ask about. You mentioned this psychic numbing. One of the things that you have worked on and elaborated is this idea of the psychophysical numbing, the idea that if people hear about a level of loss of life, for example, that's of an extraordinarily large number, that it actually becomes more difficult to connect to it on an emotional level. And one of the things I've talked about from a media analysis standpoint is that one of the reasons why a shooting with three victims gets more media attention than death from hunger in Africa is that the story has a defined beginning, middle, and end, and that makes it good for corporate media. But there's a whole other aspect to this that relates to your work, which is, to some degree, if you hear 7,000 children a day are dying from hunger, that it's, we intuit that it's an extremely high number, but we're not necessarily connecting to it empirically in the way that we do to the three shooting deaths to some degree. Is that roughly what you have found?
Yes. We have a saying that summarizes both what we've found in laboratory research and what we know from looking outside our window at what's going on. And that is that the more who die, the less we care. Mm. It's a rather startling realization. And that is, you know, that we care a lot about individual lives, and we'll do a lot to rescue someone, to protect an individual, particularly if we know their name, know them personally, know their name, see their face and so forth. You get an emotional connection to that life, and it's very important to protect. You don't get that emotional connection to the statistics.
Right.
You know, someone once said, statistics are human beings with the tears dried off, you know, and so you have to work at it, to think about the individual lives beneath the surface of those statistics.
You know, yeah, one of the things that some of these charities that work on hunger in Africa have done is they tell you that when you make a contribution, you'll get pictures and information about the specific person that's being helped by your donation. Whether it's true or not, it seems that they're working on the idea that you're talking about here.
Yes, they recognize that, as do reporters who often, you know, try to, you know, humanize the story by talking about individual victims in a larger tragedy, like the school shootings. You know, you see up close and personal something about the individual lives, and that does make a difference.
Last thing I'd like to ask you about: you've done work on the I believe it's called the psychometric paradigm of risk perception, which relates to if we have positive or negative feelings about a certain activity, it affects our perception of how risky it is. So if, for example, you really like riding a motorcycle, you might perceive that it is more safe actually to ride a motorcycle than it is in reality. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, that again results from our relying on our feelings as opposed to statistics. So if you like something, you have a positive feeling towards it, then it feels safer, you know. It feels like it's very beneficial, and the risk is low. If you dislike something, then you're likely to view it as high in risk and low in benefit, regardless of what the statistics say. So, for example, with regard to medicines, with regard to chemicals, there are chemicals we tend to think are good chemicals, like medicines, and bad chemicals like pesticides.
Right.
So we rate pesticides. We start with our feeling that we dislike them, and so we judge them as high in risk and low in benefit, even though pesticides have a lot of benefits. The same thing with medicines. We tend to have more favorable view of medicines, so we judge them as very beneficial and low in risk, even though some medicines can be very dangerous. So it starts with our feelings, and then we derive our sense of risk and benefit from those feelings.
What's the right way to assess risk, if there is such a sense? I mean, do we need experts? Are expert assessments better than a layperson's, or how can we sort of account for all of these biases?
The right way is to try to learn when we can trust our feelings and when we can't. And we just discussed situations we can't trust our feelings is when we get statistics that are large,
right,
and complex. The other is we need to rely on experts. You know, absolutely. We need to evaluate what we're hearing, you know, with our feelings. What the person is saying, does it feel right? Are there sources? Are there data? You know, does that seem valid and so forth? We need both of these ways of thinking, what Kahneman calls fast thinking, you know, with our gut feelings, and slow thinking, right, with, you know, analysis and trust in experts. We need to do that. We need to look for trusted experts to help us in these complex situations.
We've been speaking with Dr. Paul Slovic, who's a professor of psychology at the University of Oregon. Really appreciate your insights and your time today.
Thank you very much, David.
All right, let's debunk some nonsense claims that are spreading. Always important if you're going to engage with this stuff to at least have some sense of what reality is and understand where the talking points come from. Now, one of the things that I have said before is that very often the completely incorrect, wild, destructive conspiracy theories from the right have like a kernel of truth in their origins. Now, I don't mean that the conspiracy theory itself has an element of truth, but what I mean is what catalyzed the conspiracy theory is something that is true that's like very generally in the universe of what they're talking about. And we're going to look at a clip here of Lara Logan. Lara Logan used to sort of be a respectable journalist. She has gone completely off the rails. We've covered some of her anti-Semitic stuff. We've covered all of her different conspiracy theories. She seems completely disconnected from reality. And she spoke somewhere, you know, who the hell cares? It's another, there's this circle, this speaking tour circle, where the crazier the things are that you have to say, the more likely it is that you'll get more of these gigs. And Lara Logan claimed that illegal immigrants who cross the border illegally get a social security number at the border, and that then they can just go and vote. Now, none of that is true. I will tell you, after we look at the clip, what is the likely origin of this. All right, let's take a look.
Questions, because it's quite satisfying having all the answers. However, they said they could not make a decision at this time, and they would let me know. That's true. But they asked me two very interesting questions when I went there. They asked me if I'd be willing to take up arms to defend the Constitution of the United States of America. Isn't that interesting? They seem to have forgotten that part, right? And then, among the many interesting parts of this is you look around you and, you know, what you have to remember is that they don't actually believe in citizenship.
Oh.
And now, when people come across the border illegally, I have this confirmed from Border Patrol agents who are actually physically doing this. They get given a social security number.
They get given one. They get given. That's interesting. And people in the crowd go, right, right. Why would they get a social security number? That doesn't make any sense. But the crowd just, right, right.
They get assigned a social security number when they cross. I'm not sure how many of you are aware of that. And if
right.
you really want...
Well, the people aware of it are wrongly aware of it because it's not true, and we'll get to that.
I don't know when the cheating starts. It's long before you get to the polls, right? I mean, think about it. It starts with the census. It starts with counting illegal immigrants in the census. How do you determine how many members of Congress you get? Population size, right? So how does, you know, California has all these delegates at the Electoral College.
And now, of course, the reason California has all those electoral votes is California's population is genuinely massive. It's bigger than like most countries. But also, the larger your population, at least in some general sense, the larger number of undocumented immigrants that might also be there.
You don't just get more money from the federal government for your increased population. You don't just get more congressional candidates representing you. But what else do you get? You get an opportunity to pad the voter rolls.
Ah.
With people.
But wait, Lara. Undocumented immigrants can't vote.
Who are being completely and utterly exploited. And there's one thing that I've learned as I've been investigating this is they love euphemisms, right? They love euphemisms.
Sort of like Republicans, right? I mean, they love to say pro-life, which really is a euphemism for we tell women what to do.
It's all about democracy. And if there's any form of voter security, that's voter suppression and racism and white supremacy. And if it's the other side, you know, anything we can do to get more people out to vote. But actually, when you talk to the canvassers, they'll tell you that when they go into the low-income areas, you know, sometimes they're predominantly Hispanic, sometimes they're black, sometimes they're white. But that's where they find the most fraud.
Fraud. All the fraud is in those areas. Now, it may not shock you that just about everything she's saying is completely made up. First of all, as far as fraud or the Freud or fraud or whatever, it's really, it's almost non-existent. And the couple dozen cases that we've actually identified since 2020, it's almost all Republicans. It's like white Republicans in white Republican areas, either testing the system or like one guy voted for his wife who disappeared. We covered that last week. But most importantly, the stuff about undocumented immigrants are getting social security numbers at the border, which then allows them to vote. Aaron Reichland Melnick explained the truth about this on Twitter. Aaron's the policy director for the American Immigration Council and used to be an immigration lawyer. Some asylum seekers, he wrote, become eligible for a work authorization while they wait. Now, it usually takes about a year. It's not happening at the border, but there are people who are in the U.S. illegally. They've been in the U.S. for a year. They've asked for asylum. They then get a work authorization, and they can get what's called a restricted social security number. It's so that they can pay taxes and legally work. And listen to this. They pay into social security. They're not eligible to collect unless they win asylum and become citizens. So there are some undocumented immigrants who, after a year, while waiting for their asylum request to be adjudicated, have asked for work authorization, have been told you can do it, but you've got to pay into Social Security. And if your asylum request is rejected and you get sent back to your source country, you don't get anything out of the Social Security system, essentially subsidizing the Social Security payments of people who will ultimately get benefits. That's the truth. They're not eligible to vote. They can't register to vote. They would not be able to vote. They don't vote. They can't vote. So that's the kernel from which some of these conspiracy theories originate. Asylum seekers can sometimes eventually get a restricted social security number. And that becomes at the border, you just show up and they give you a social security number. And next thing you know, you're voting for Biden. A complete and total farce. Does Lara Logan know that she's lying? I think she probably does. On this particular one, I think that she probably does. Let me know what you think. Lauren Boebert, radical Republican Congresswoman Lauren Boebert, has shifted from the relentless attacks on electric vehicles to attempts to limit access to certain types of firearms. Now, there's a lot of this sky is falling stuff from the right. On electric vehicles, we heard yesterday from Marjorie Taylor Greene, if everybody gets an electric vehicle, it's going to be a dystopia and there's not going to be any power. There's going to be blackouts. People will die. There will be no food. It'll be crazy. And we debunked that piece by piece yesterday. Lauren Boebert, her sort of comrade in arms, as we might call it, even though I don't know that they really like each other that much, despite whatever they might want to believe, they are quite similar in many ways. She's going after gun bans. And Lauren Boebert said yesterday that if you ban assault weapons, not even if you ban all guns, if you ban assault weapons and people still can have handguns, people are going to end up eating dogs here in the United States. What? Listen.
Living her life, providing a crust for your employees, providing for your family. Why did you do what you did in a public forum in front of that politician? Why did you feel the need to stand up?
Yes, so Dr. Gorka, my upbringing, I lived under failed policies. I lived in a Democrat household, and I saw firsthand, I experienced...
The policies of her own parents in that Democrat household, where her parents distributed food to all the kids, even though the kids weren't working. She was living under democratic socialism in her own home. Okay.
It's firsthand how restrictive their policies are. There's not a lot of liberty under Democrat rule. In fact, it left us in bread lines waiting for government cheese. And I knew that that was not America's best.
They give out cheese in the bread line. Can you believe that? That sounds unorganized.
11 years old. So I started working as a young teenager at a McDonald's and learned that I could do a better job taking care of myself than government did. Ooh. Now, fast forward, I have a husband, four wonderful boys, and a restaurant, and a lot of employees, vendors, patrons.
Yeah, the restaurant has closed.
That I needed to take care of. And I saw the Second Amendment to be the best line of defense to make sure everyone was kept safe in my establishment. Now, I am a petite woman, and I need an equalizer. I need an equalizer to protect me against a larger potential aggressor. And when Beto O'Rourke told the world the Democrat playbook, hell yes, we intend to take your AR-15s and your AK-47s, I was compelled to go to him because I saw that a disarmed populace, if the citizenry in America is disarmed, then we are no longer citizens. We are subjects. You know, here in America, we have gourmet treats for puppies. We have these amazing groomers for dogs. Well, in Venezuela, they eat the dogs. And it started because they don't have firearms. They do not have a way to protect themselves, to defend themselves against a tyrannical government.
Now, a great way to test this hypothesis, no assault weapons leads to eating dogs, would be to look at the countries around the world where you can't get assault weapons. And they're really not eating dogs in any of those countries. Now, I know that there are a few countries where dog meat is eaten, and we've talked about some of those countries before, and those countries have a sort of varying gun legislation. But by and large, I looked, there is no correlation between dog eating and bans on all weapons, guns, never mind specifically assault weapons. This is yet another one of these scare tactics. They don't know what to do next. It's gotten to a point with the gun stuff where the country is ready to say, let's try doing something with the guns. Now, not everybody, and certainly not our elected officials. But at this point, most people don't think the issue is just mental health. Most people don't think the issue is just doors or ladders or staircases or fire escapes or whatever else. At some point, many people are going to say, I don't love it necessarily, but let's at least try dealing with the guns. They being Republicans, they may lose the midterms because of their unwillingness to do anything as far as the guns go. And so now they're coming up with, you know, if we ban the guns, you're going to be eating Sparky. Sparky's going to be barbecued if we get rid of guns. And of course, it's absurd. And they're desperate to prevent anything being done about the guns. Now, will anything be done about the guns? Remains to be seen. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here's a caller asking about, could there be a millennial exodus coming? Listen to this.
Hey, David. So do you think it's reasonable to say that maybe in the next few years, maybe up to 10 years, we could experience some sort of exodus of young people, say, you know, let's say 19 or 20 years old, so maybe early 30s, you know, like young professionals who just feel discouraged.
By the way, I don't think a 19-year-old now is a millennial, but that doesn't even matter. Doesn't even matter. We're still taking the question.
Due to politics in this country, so many issues going on, and they may want to just live somewhere else. Do you think that that's really going to be a possible thing? And where do you think most of those young people would go? Also, for the previous caller, Einstein Bagels. That's the place to go.
Okay, I don't know about the Einstein Bagels thing. So here's the deal. There is no question that there are young millennials and then, you know, the next generation after that, I guess that's Gen Z, who are very displeased generally speaking, with the stagnant wage, student loan debt, right-wing politics industrial complex. They're not feeling good about it, and many of them would love to opt out in different ways. Now, opting out might be accepting a sort of more simple rural life rather than the typical graduate from college and then move to or stay in a big city. That might be one element of it. But the reality is most people are going to need to work, and it's pretty difficult to move to most other countries that people would want to go to. I mean, some of the easier countries to move to are countries that are not necessarily high on the list of places people want to move to. I mean, there are countries. Listen, Argentina, where I was born, it's relatively easy to move to Argentina and eventually find legal status. You can go if you eventually are able to get employment or start attending school. You are given a path to legalization. It takes years, but you can just sort of do it. But the economy is a shambles. And so why would anybody want to do it? It doesn't really make any sense. So while I think the idea is a accurate one, there's lots of people, young millennials, Gen Z, who would love to say, I'm packing it up. I'm going to do something completely different. Unless you want to, you know, teach English somewhere or join the Peace Corps. Sometimes these are the ways to do it. It's pretty hard to move to a lot of the places people would want to move to. And so for that particular reason, I don't think it's going to be a big thing. We have a great bonus show for you today. The Senate Republicans are now backtracking after a huge firestorm over the veterans bill. Eastern Kentucky flooding has now caused 37 deaths, and there is more rain in the forecast. What is going on? What is the infrastructure situation that is leading to these deaths? And also, we have learned that the Sandy Hook parents, who are the plaintiffs in the Alex Jones defamation case, due to safety concerns, they have been isolated with security during this wacky Alex Jones trial. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com to get instant access.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Thank you.
nuclear holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And we want everyone to always have freedom with security, and we're not backing away from that.
U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi becomes the highest-ranking U.S. official to visit Taiwan in quarter of a century. China responds with military drills. We'll go to Taipei to speak with Brian Chi-Shing Hu, Taiwanese-American journalist, editor of New Bloom magazine. And we'll speak with Michael Swain of the Quincy Institute, author of America's Challenge, Engaging a Rising China in the 21st Century. Then Senate Republicans reverse themselves again and pass a bill to aid U.S. veterans poisoned by the Pentagon's use of toxic burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan after being shamed by veteran victims, their survivors, and comedian Jon Stewart.
I will say this. I'm not sure I've ever seen a situation where people who have already given so much had to fight so hard to get so little. And I hope we learn a lesson.
President Biden says toxic burn pits may have contributed to the death of his son, Beau Biden, who served in Iraq and was then diagnosed with brain cancer. We'll look at the impact of burn pits not only on U.S. veterans, but on Iraqis as well, with Professor Kali Rabai, just back from Fallujah.
Iraqi people have endured long-term exposure to both burn pits and the other effects of military occupation on their land and their livelihoods. And so those long-term effects are not only limited to Iraqi people, but are also global effects of war accelerating climate change conditions for people who are living in damaged ecosystems.
And Kansas becomes the first state to vote on abortion rights after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Voters overwhelmingly reject an anti-abortion constitutional amendment. We'll get an update. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's departed Taiwan after a controversial visit that was criticized by the Chinese government as well as some officials within the Biden administration. Earlier today, Pelosi met with Taiwan's president and said U.S. support for Taiwan is ironclad.
Today, the world faces a choice between democracy and autocracy. America's determination to preserve democracy here in Taiwan and around the world remains ironclad.
Pelosi is the highest-level U.S. official to visit Taiwan in quarter of a century. China denounced her visit, saying it was damaging to stability in the Taiwan Strait. China's announced plans to carry out new air and naval drills and long-range live-fire exercises in six areas around Taiwan beginning Thursday. Taiwan said the military exercises are, quote, tantamount to an air and sea blockade of Taiwan. We'll have more on Taiwan after headlines. Voters in Kansas have overwhelmingly rejected an anti-abortion ballot measure. Nearly 60% of Kansan voters opposed adding a constitutional amendment to remove the right to an abortion in the state. The lopsided vote surprised many. During the